Once I mentioned Laura Sigmund, she hasn't won a game since. She's about to lose the second set down 5-2, but that'll take it to a third set still. She makes things interesting, for sure. All right, Tommy was on with me yesterday. Tommy knows Mike Rizzo well, Davey Martinez well. He has certainly spent a lot of time following this ownership group. So let's get to what Tommy thought about the firings of Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez.
Well, you know, look, I beat this drum, and there's people out, some people out there that don't want to hear it. You know, they look at Mike's record of drafting, you know, after they got good, and it hasn't been that good in player personnel drafting, okay? And they look at the way the team plays sometimes, particularly of late on the field, where they look like they're not disciplined, their head's not in the game, and that reflects poorly on Dave Martinez. I get all that, okay? And that's what fans can see, okay? But to beat a dead horse, they're both operating with both hands tied behind their back. They are literally handcuffed. You know, if there's a town, if there's any town in America that knows the impact of bad ownership,
right,
it should be Washington, D.C.
Right.
I know it's a cliche. People, lots of people say, oh, it's blame the owners, you know, they don't spend enough money. But that's reality. That's the reality here. And so, you know, the things that Mike has done bad, the things that Davey has done bad, they can't be disconnected to the lack of ability to do their jobs because of the learner's miserly way of doing business. I mean, it's just, you can't, I keep saying it, but I can't ignore it. I mean, this year they spent $65 million on their active roster. Okay, that's insane. And think about this. Think about when I talk about being handcuffed by the owners, there's just one example of, I'm sure, many, many more. Okay, in 2019, after the World Series, Ted Lerner signed Steven Strasburg to his seven-year, $245 million contract with Scott Boras.
Right.
He did so behind Mike Rizzo's back. Rizzo was frozen out of the deal.
Why?
Okay. Because Rizzo never would have went for the deal. Mike never would have given Strasburg a seven-year deal, given how fragile he was. Probably less than half that, if anything. So they went behind his back.
Right.
And they made this deal. Now, Steven Strasburg is still getting paid $35 million a year. He's been retired for a couple of years and hasn't pitched in a game of any consequence since the World Series. Okay, that's $35 million a year. That's more than half of the entire active roster payroll the team is spending right now.
Right.
Imagine if they had that, if Mike had that $35 million to add to the $65 million, and then you're looking at $100 million, still paltry, but enough maybe to get a higher level of free agent than Paul DeJong or Jung, Josh Bell, you know, guys like that, you know, Michael Soroka, just to get a little higher level of free agent than that. That's just one example of countless things that the learners have done to basically handcuff their baseball operations people. So when we judge the baseball operations people, I don't think you can fairly judge them without knowing that they've got their hands tied behind their backs.
By the way, the Nats' payroll is 27th in the league right now this year. That's where it is among the 30 MLB teams. So,
and it's specific. It's specific, though. I mean, payroll can be interpreted. There's all kinds of different figures.
Right.
Okay. I am going with the active roster payroll.
That's where
guys.
It is. Active is 27th. Total payroll allocations is 23rd.
Okay. Yeah. That's why. And last year, it was $60 million. And the year before that, It was $60 million.
Yeah. So I had Chelsea Janes from the Washington Post on the show, on the radio show today, and she said something that I thought was interesting. She said that one of the reasons that she was taken aback a little bit about what happened yesterday is that the action was swift and decisive, and that's, you know, out of character for the ownership group, at least, you know, these days. And I'm wondering if, you know, any of that played into to your reaction, because many have claimed that they've been disconnected from the reality of the situation and even their part in it. Did you feel that way at all?
Not really. I've come to expect that. You know, that they have not been a very active ownership, except with the occasional statement, the occasional mealy-mouthed statement that we get from them. They don't sit down and do interviews. Okay, maybe in spring training, Mark will do an interview with the Post or something like that. No, that didn't surprise
me. Tommy, talk about the ownership, because when Ted died, Ted Lerner passed away in 2023. You have referred to, you know, there's several people involved. We, as fans, you know Mark Lerner. That's essentially it. He is he's the top dog among the ownership group. But just describe the makeup of the ownership group, because I think that is a mystery to a lot of fans.
Well, I don't know the exact makeup, but the key decision makers here are Mark, his two sisters, and their husbands. Okay.
So Mark, two sisters, and Mark's two brother-in-laws.
Yes.
And they are all involved in the business?
Yes. Well, to some extent.
Okay.
They are all the decision makers. In other words, like, if anything significant has to be done, it should be done with them involved. And the divide, as I understand it, is between the two brothers in law to sell the team, is between the two brother-in-laws and Mark, and Mark's sisters have sided with him.
Mark's sisters have sided with their brother, Mark.
Mark.
And
yes,
the two brother-in-laws want to sell, and the other three don't?
They have been. That has been the position.
Okay.
I have not had much contact this year with them as to whether that's changed, but traditionally that has been the way it's been lined up.
Why do the brother-in-laws have a say in this? Are they equity holders? Do they own?
Yes.
They do.
They're part of the partnership, yeah.
All right, so
and that story I told about Strasburg?
Yeah.
Okay. There are so many more that we don't even know about. And everyone in the league knows this. Okay? They have as bad a reputation as I make them out to have, they have a worse reputation inside the industry of baseball.
Okay.
I'll be real curious how they go about hiring a general manager. Look, we know somebody will come take the job if it's offered. You know, people came to work for Dan Snyder.
Yep.
So there'll always be somebody to take the job, but you're not going to get anybody good. And anybody who takes the job is going to know what Mike knew, that their biggest job every day is to manage upward. That's their biggest job, to manage above them, to manage the family, to manage the ownership.
Mike Rizzo's statement in a text to Barry's Verluga yesterday, "The sun will come up tomorrow. That's the job. I had a great run." Navigated that ownership group for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Have you?
And here's the other thing.
Yeah.
This will be the first time the Lerners have hired a general manager.
Right, because he was on Bowden's staff.
Yeah, and it was Stan Kasten.
Right.
Who brought Mike to Washington.
Right.
You know, they inherited Bowden. They didn't fire him until he got caught up in the Smiley Gonzalez scandal.
Right.
And then Stan Kasten hired Rizzo to be the general manager. He had already brought him in as an assistant GM. So they've owned this team for 20 years, and they've never actually had to hire a general manager before.
Do they need to hire a team president who hires a general manager?
That would probably be a good idea.
Okay, you talked about their reputation within baseball. That leads me to this. They're either going to, I mean, it's one of 30 jobs, so somebody's going to take the job, just like they did with the football team. We understand that. But are they aware enough of the reputation that they have around the sport? And do you think that they'd be willing to change? Are they capable of changing and then, you know, becoming, you know, an organization that could attract the best of the best in terms of general manager candidates and pay them? And then the same would go for, you know, the open managerial position at the end of this year. I mean, is there any, you know, hope for Nats fans that this reputation is fleeting, and I know it's been around for a while, and that they come to grips with it and change?
I would be shocked if they did anything other than what they've been doing. Look, I mean, having a bad reputation in their industry is not anything new.
No.
For this family.
Right.
Okay.
In their,
it's not,
right.
In their respective businesses.
Right.
That's not, so I don't see them saying, oh my God, you know, we have to change our ways. Not these guys. Not these guys. I mean, the way they've gotten to this point, they're one of the richest owners in Major League Baseball. I don't know how much of a hit they've taken real estate wise, but I'm venturing it's a lot since COVID. But these guys changing, that would be a dramatic turnaround.
I know that we've talked about this in the past, but they did go through a period where they spent money on players.
Yes, they did.
And post 2019 winning the World Series, we had a pandemic. We talked a lot about that, just the worst possible timing for a franchise that really needed the financial boon that comes with winning a World Series, especially when it's the first World Series. I mean, you know, it had been nearly 100 years. And
they were dealt a bad hand.
A really bad hand. Then you, on top of it, the ownership's primary business was commercial real estate, and nobody was going to work. And then, you know, they started to look to sell the team. So we've been in this sort of state of, will they or won't they sell the team? Then Ted Lerner passed away. Like, a lot of things have happened since 2019. What's the most impactful in terms of what's ultimately led to them being super cheap and six hideous losing seasons?
Well, you can't, as I said, you can't deny that when the Nats were drafting in the lower rounds, as opposed to the, you know, top 10 draft picks, when they were winning, their draft picks would be in the lower rounds. And Mike Rizzo's department did not draft well in a lot of those years, and that wound up hurting them. But, you know, this is what happens. If you're not a small market team, you have the ability to overcome your mistakes. That's why I always say, small market teams can't afford to make mistakes. They make a big mistake, and it sets them back for years. But if you're at least a mid-market or mid to large market, you have the resources to be able to overcome your mistakes.
Right.
Okay? What happened in a couple of
bad drafts, Did the Nats have the resources of a big market team at any point?
Not the Red Sox.
I know. But, you know, remember, they had a bad Masson deal, so there was that part, you know, that played into it. But you're suggesting that they were a big enough market that they could have overcome their drafting and developmental, you know, farm system mistakes.
Yes. The Lerners claim they've lost $100 million a year. I know for a fact that from 2017 to 2021, they got $300 million in Masson money. Okay. I know that period for a fact, over that five-year period. That's nothing to sneeze at. Last year, or 2023, they got $70 million in Masson money. That's more than what they spent on their entire payroll. So while it wasn't an ideal situation, to use it as a crutch like they did was disingenuous.
So who are they going to hire? They've got this Mike DiBartolo that's going to take over on an interim basis. Let me just start there. The timing of this, people seem to have a major problem with it. How will it impact both the draft and then, by the way, trade deadline, to which Ken Rosenthal said, if they let DiBartolo be bold, this might be the time to move Mackenzie Gore. He's in the same situation, same year of the Soto deal.
He makes a good point, but that would hurt the learners. The learners have gone on record and say that they think they're close to competing. Okay, they think that they're very close to competing, and then to trade your best pitcher when you think you've been telling people you think you're close. No, they won't do that. Remember, another example of what they did to handcuff Rizzo. In the 2018 season, Bryce Harper's last year here as a free agent.
Right.
Rizzo had put together a deal, a good deal, with the Houston Astros for a couple of prospects. A particularly good deal, since Harper would only be a rental for the Astros that year. Okay? Rizzo had the deal done. He had his hand on the phone ready to dial. The learner said, no, don't do it. Don't make the deal. So they wound up getting nothing for Bryce Harper's departure.
Right.
I would think that Gore leaving would be that Bryce Harper fear. They'd be worried about what the signal it sends to their fan base. You know, they've got very peculiar. They care about what the fan base thinks, but only what they want to hear in very selective hearing.
Yeah, you've said that before. You've said that they do care about what people think about them, but they also kind of lack real reality in terms of how people do think about them. Like, they only want to hear the things that are nice about them, or all they hear.
This is what we've encountered with so many other people.
Yeah.
In positions of power in sports.
Snyder.
The value of having a voice that will tell you what you need to hear is immeasurable, and few owners in any sports seem to have them.
So what are they going to do now? Mike Rizzo's gone. Dave Martinez is gone. They'll have an interim GM. They already have that. They'll have an interim manager named at some point during today because the Nats are off tonight. They play tomorrow night in St. Louis. As of this recording, they have not named an interim manager. When we get to the end of this season, who are they going to hire? Do you have any names that you're going to write about or that you've thought about? Are they going to be able to attract anybody? What are they going to have to pay? Will they be willing to pay it? They'll get somebody to do the job, but will it be better? Or are we doomed to be kind of what we've been here, which is a big market team, not L.A., New York, Boston, Chicago, but certainly a bigger market team that operates as if it's small to mid-market?
I don't know who they're going to hire to manage the team. Again, the learners are cheap. They don't spend a lot of money on their managers. Okay, so that's going to come into play. And if they do this right, the general manager, whoever it is, will hire the manager. I mean, that's always the right way to do it.
Right.
So, and I don't know who, you know, there's a couple of candidates would be out there who would be, and like I said, you know, Dan Snyder got people to come work in Washington. So there's people who would take the general manager's job who are smart people who think, well, I can manage them. You know, I can handle the ownership. So but as far as candidates, I don't have much to offer you.
I mean, this is a future of watching James Wood turn into a superstar and then end up in New York or LA,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Scott Boras candidate.
Speaking of James Wood, named to the All-Star team along with Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, yes, that was good. When you're operating on such a thin dime, like Mike Rizzo has done putting together the team, particularly this year, you know, you have to have some guys who have career years that you pick up, or at least good years, you know, like a Josh Bell or some of the other free agents. Like Michael Soroka was basically the only starting pitcher. The Nats wanted to add a veteran starter. They could only afford Soroka, who got $8 million for a one-year deal, and they only got him because he wanted to be a starter. He's coming off a series of injuries, had been a reliever for a while in Atlanta, wanted to go back to being a starter, and nobody would offer him a starting job. The Nationals were the only team to guarantee him he would have a chance to start. So for three innings, and when he starts, he looks good, and then he falls apart.
Tommy, how did they manage with the Learners as owners to have an eight-year run from 2012 through 2019 where they were in the postseason five times? They won more games than anybody in Major League Baseball with the exception of the Dodgers, and they won a World Series. With ownership like the Learners, how did they have a run like that?
Well, they did have, look, Scott Boras was their adopted son. Okay, they developed a close relationship with Boras, and Boras saw a place where his number one draft pick, Strasburg 1 year, Bryce Harper the next, would have a place to basically, you know, become stars. Okay, and Jason Worth, one of his clients as well, could have a chance to have a big payday and help change the franchise. So Boras and the Learners became very tight in the early days of the Learners' ownership. And he convinced them to spend money on his clients, I might point out. You know, I'll give you an example of another thing that the Learners did. I forget what year it was. Might have been 2013 or something like that. But it was... I'm looking it up right now as we speak.
Okay.
But in 2013, what's his name? Who was the closer before? Drew something?
Oh, yeah, the one that melted down in Game 5
yeah.
against the one from Stanford.
Right, but he was their closer going into 2013.
Right.
Okay. But he had a good year.
Drew Storen.
Melted down. But did not play well in the postseason.
Right.
Okay. Ted Lerner called Mike Rizzo one day in the winter and said, I got your closer. Okay. Rafael Soriano.
Yeah.
A Boras client. Made the deal, didn't tell Rizzo. Their closer, the general manager, had no input whatsoever.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
Not good at all. They had something going right there for a while. Rizzo was doing something right. I remember, you know, this was thought to be a pretty good organization with a good farm system, you know, the likes of Jordan Zimmerman and Anthony Rendon and others. And you don't end up with the second best record over an 8 year period without doing something right there for a while. So it hasn't always been what it's been here in the last few years.
You're right. I mean, like, they had a lot of things. Like I said, a lot of things have to go right when you're playing close to the vest. Okay, they got Mike Morse for nothing from Seattle. He turned into a big home run hitter.
Yeah.
Okay, 30-plus home runs for them. Okay, they got Tanner Roark for nothing in the trade for Christian Guzman. He became a 15-game winner. So they had the Gio Gonzalez deal. He gave away a bunch of prospects, none of them who turned out to be anything, and Gonzalez wound up to be a 20-game winner.
Yeah,
so a lot of things went right.
From the A's,
just like they do for any front office. You know? But they're playing so close to the vest now that everything has to be right. There is no room for mistakes. And every team makes mistakes. But some teams say, okay, we made a mistake, let's fix it.
Yeah, we went from understanding what the pandemic meant to the 2020 and 2021 season to then, you know, that horrible season where they, you know, won 55 games, but then the Soto trade, which everybody, congratulates Mike Rizzo on, the players that he was able to bring back from that trade, James Wood, the two All-Stars for starters, Mackenzie Gore and James Wood. And it just seemed like starting in 2023, I remember, Rizzo being, on a show somewhere saying, we're 2 years, we're a year, 2 years away from contending for a wild card spot in the National League playoffs. And he thought that first year would be 24 and then maybe, this year, and certainly wasn't this year.
They won 71 games last year. That's more than what people thought they would win.
Yep, it was, I think the last 2 years were over the total, yeah.
If he had been given the payroll to add a higher level of free agents around those young players, they might have won 80 games last year. Okay, now, but with all that said, this year's roster, the expectations among baseball experts, the Nats were a 68-win team.
Yeah.
At the most.
Yep.
So, despite the excitement out there, the experts did not see that based on the roster they put together. The news is broken that the Nationals have hired Miguel Cairo as the club's interim manager.
Yeah, seeing that.
He has been the team's bench coach since 2024.
Okay. What do you know about Miguel Cairo?
Not much. I mean, he's a friend of Davies.
Yeah.
He was the bench coach for the White Sox. I don't know much about him.
Will Rizzo get hired by somebody?
Well, it's interesting. I talked to Mike briefly just to see how he's doing. He didn't really offer anything in terms of what his future might be. Yeah, I think he could get hired to a number of GM jobs that if they became vacant. I also think if he wanted to, he could do well in the media because I think he's pretty good with the media. I wouldn't be surprised to see Mike show up on television in postseason baseball.
Yeah, I think he'd be good at that. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be good at that.
Yeah.
All right. What else on all of this?
Well, I don't know much about Mike DiBartolo either. That's not a front office guy. The new interim GM, one of Rizzo's guys, not familiar with him much at all.
Well, I'm gonna summarize kind of my thoughts here to finish up this opening segment. I wanted to hear all of what you thought beforehand because this is an area that you are so much more familiar with in terms of the people and what's been happening over the last many years. But, netting it out, not that I needed yesterday to kind of come to the realization that this is true, but the arrow is not pointing up for this franchise, despite some decent things that are happening. James Wood, Mackenzie Gore, some decent prospects in the pipeline. But as long as the current ownership group is in place, and I don't want to sound like we all sounded for many, many years with Dan Snyder, that as long as Snyder owned the team, they were never going to win. It's not the same thing. I mean, first of all, different people, detestable people in the form of Dan first owned the football team for a long period of time and never had the success that the Lerners had for 8 years as the owners of this franchise. But I think, people that have done business with – them. I know people in town that have done business with them. And it's always been about business. It's always been about the bottom line. This isn't always about winning. It is the way that they've run their own businesses. You know, they have counted every single dollar, and they are very, very disciplined when it comes to the cost side and running the business and making sure that at the end of, you know, a given business calendar, they made money or they stuck to the way in which they thought they could make money. And I think as long as that's the case, you know, you're going to need that inside straight season. You're going to need, you know, everything to kind of come together for them to, you know, snag a wild card berth, you know, in a given year. I mean, think about the competition. You know, they are running a business. They are more mid to small market minded, and they're competing with the Mets and the Phillies and the Braves in their own division, let alone the Dodgers and the Cubs and other big spending National League franchises. So, you know, absent that, you know, season in which everything comes together, and you know they're healthy and they have a couple of outlier years from two or three players and two or three pitchers, and they win 86 games and they snag a wild card berth. Yeah, overall the arrow just seems to be right now, as long as current ownership exists, not pointing up.
That speaks to the idea when you're a small market team, you can't afford to make a mistake that'll set you back. Okay, guys, teams like the Royals of Tampa Bay do a great job. You know, you can't afford to make mistakes. You know, you don't have that luxury. The Nationals aren't the Yankees, but they still should have been in a position to say, okay, we're not getting our players from our farm system. Let's go out and spend a little bit more money. Okay, I'm not talking about, you know, Jason Worth kind of money, Bryce Harper kind of money. I'm talking about mid-level free agents. Okay, not Josh Bell for 1 year, $5 million.
Right.
Okay, and they were certainly capable of doing that.
Mike wasn't surprised, right?
Yeah, I didn't get this from Mike. And I know he really likes living in Washington.
Right.
He loves the area.
Yeah.
He's established some deep roots here in D.C. But on the other hand, there has to be a sense of relief for him. I don't know about Davey so much, but I always thought that there was a sense of fatigue that had set in. Like they were just fighting against their own team instead of fighting other teams. You know, they had to wake up every day to fight against their own team. And I think that took its toll on both of them.
Right.
You know, because Davey never gave a hint that he was unhappy with the owners. Once in a while, he would use the word, and this was the key word. They both used it. Hopefully.
Right.
They would, once in a while, they would occasionally say, hopefully we'll be able to spend money, hopefully this, hopefully that, when it was totally in their control. There was nothing to hope for except that their owners would do what they're asking.
All right, that was from the podcast yesterday. The news about the interim manager broke, obviously, during that. When we come back, Grant Paulson will be our guest. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980.
All right, some updates from Wimbledon as Taylor Fritz has defeated Karen Khachanov in a tiebreak to advance to the semifinal. He will face the winner of Cam Nori and Carlos Alcaraz, which gets underway shortly. And Arnia Sabalenka is currently tied with Laura Sigmund at one set apiece. And American Amanda Anisimova takes on Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova at after this game. And the NBA, Devin Booker signed a two-year, $150 million extension to stay in Phoenix. Paolo Banchero signed a five-year rookie max extension with Orlando worth up to $287 million. And the Pacers confirmed that Tyrese Halliburton will miss all of next season with a ruptured Achilles tendon. The Nats. New era begins tonight in St. Louis. Former Nats bench coach Miguel Cairo will make his managerial debut with the team today. 7:45 is first pitch, and Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 7:15. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.